Hello, everyone. This is Sean Ennis with the MMA Torchcast for June 8th, 2007. Joining me this week is Mike Jarslick. Mike, how's it going?
Oh, pretty well. How you doing?
Doing all right, man. So we got a lot of stuff going on, or at least a lot of stuff that happened this past week. Let's jump right into it with K1. I know you saw the show. What are your immediate thoughts coming out of that event?
The show was very strange. I wasn't expecting that type of show. Okay, with all the downtime, it was interesting though. I had two of my friends over, and they really enjoyed it. They enjoyed the fight. They thought a lot of this stuff on the show was with the Mexican band and the Olympic ceremony. Really strange.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see all the fights. I saw the Elite XC portion of the show, or I should say the Showtime portion of the show. I haven't seen the K1 version yet, or at least checking out the pay-per-view part. Just haven't had time to check it out yet. But I like you said, it's just a very strange vibe.
Yeah, the even stranger news came out today. ShareDog's reporting that there were 43,000 people in attendance. And,
yeah.
I didn't pause the pay-per-view broadcast with my TiVo and count them, but I don't think there were that many.
Yeah, well, I was looking at that. Now, I don't know if the crowd got bigger after the Showtime portion, but it didn't look like that arena. I mean, it holds, what, 90-some thousand, close to 100?
I would say for an MMA show, it would be closer to 100.
Yeah, to me, that didn't even look anywhere close to halfway full.
Yeah, it. I would say I'd be surprised if it was a third full for at least until the sun went down.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty decent-sized crowd, all things considered. Mm-hmm. But 42,000, I mean, that seems really high to me.
Yeah, they have some number breakdowns. I just read the story before we went on the air, so I didn't get a chance to do the math to see if things worked out. But it was explained that you could get in through the turnstiles or through another way. And it seemed like about 18,000 people came in through the turnstiles and 24,000 snuck in through the back door.
I see. So how do they count those guys?
I don't know. It's based on tickets sold, which I have a feeling that K1 purchased a lot of tickets himself.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
We're basically handling the tickets.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me a lot of the show was based around hyperbole. I mean, you know, just the way it came off. As far as, you know, I just thought it was humorous. During the first part where Mauro Ranallo kept referring to the size of the crowd, but it looked so tiny.
Yeah, I think he used the term sea of humanity, and I'm like, what are you talking about? There were times where I thought he was actually making fun of the size.
Oh, yeah, it didn't seem like it could have been serious. It was ridiculous. But, yeah, it was just odd. And the thing that occurred to me, I saw the beginning of the K1 part, the DJ. What was up with the DJ?
Apparently they hired some local DJ in order to host the show, and he really did not know what he was doing.
Yeah, that was quite possibly one of the most horrible things I've ever seen. He's a DJ at an MMA event. It was mind-blowing to me.
It's something that's done quite often. If you go to an amateur or a pro-am event, they will usually have a DJ.
I can see that, you know, in a smaller place, and especially if a guy, you know, if he knows what he's doing as far as, you know, similar to a ring announcer, you know, a kind of guy that keeps the flow going or something. But this guy, I don't know. It's just odd.
Yeah, it was just a very strange night.
Yeah. Well, as far as the fights go, what do you see as significance coming out of the event?
Ooh. Well, the one thing I got out of the event most was with the first fight of the K-1 show, and that was the Johnny Morton-Bernard Aca fight.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is both guys are very inexperienced. I believe it was Morton's first fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, it made a very good case because the guy went out there, the guy got knocked out, and he was down for quite a long time. And it makes a good case for maybe we need to do something about having an amateur MMA league that these guys can work their way through before becoming a professional.
Yeah, I think it's certainly not a bad idea, especially guys like Johnny Morton. You know, he goes in there and he trains for, you know, not here, he only trained for a month or two, you know, to get in the ring, which is just crazy to me.
Yeah.
You know, meanwhile, you've got guys, you know, you'd have to make exceptions for guys like Brock Lesnar, who's got obviously the pedigree, you know, having been a national champion wrestler and things like that. But, you know, a guy like Johnny Morton in football is obviously a good athlete, but he's not a fighter.
He definitely wasn't. He was way too aggressive. He kept his hands down, and he just had a really bad performance.
Yeah, not long either.
And Bernard Aca, I believe that was only his second fight, and he looked very good out there. He got good footwork. He, you know, decent striker. But I was pretty impressed with him.
Yeah. So what else did you see coming out of there?
When you talk about hyperbole, okay, the Mighty Mo Ruben Villarreal fight, okay. In the pre-fight video, they mentioned that Mighty Mo was undefeated his last five times in the ring, and I believe he had done a boxing match recently where he had lost.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And for some reason, I recall them mentioning that Dong Sik Yoon was an Olympic bronze medalist. Okay, I may be wrong about this. I may have been hearing things or have heard this somewhere else. But Dong Sik Yoon was never in the Olympics. He he's a judoka who has actually defeated some very good Olympians and some world champions, but he never actually made it to the big show. And his nickname in Korea actually stands for King Without a Crown, due to the fact that he's
really
never been in the Olympics. Yes.
Interesting. You know, it's funny that they just throw those, you know, they throw these things out there, assuming that nobody knows, nobody's the wiser anyway.
Yeah. It's the Nabimahov, Dong Sik Yoon fight was a really good fight and exciting. Nabimahov, he is a very wild striker. Okay.
Yeah.
He comes out full steam and it was one of those things that once Dong Sik Yoon got it to the ground, I started to get worried.
Yeah.
Mostly because that was my big bet for the night, but it didn't work out for me.
Hey, you figure if you got, if there was one safe bet on the card, besides maybe Lesnar, you got Manhoff taking on Yoon, who was, what, 0-4 going into the fight?
Yeah, he's 0-4, but Pride really gave him quite a few tough fights.
That's true. They matched him up tough. They gave him what? They gave him Rampage, and they gave him Sakuraba at one point, didn't they?
Yeah, he got knocked out in the first round of the 2005 Grand Prix against Sakuraba.
Yeah. Yeah. So he never had an easy draw in Pride. Of course, Manhoff isn't an easy draw either.
Yeah, he. Manhoff is he's a very interesting fighter. He sort of lives up to the stereotype of the Dutch fighters.
Yep.
And that he's all stand up, no ground. And I mean, there's a few Dutch fighters that do have a ground game, but it's the stereotype, and I think it mostly started with Gilbert Ivel.
Yep. Yeah, and kind of reminiscent of your Czech Congo, too, although he's French. But,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and what about Lesnar? What were your impressions of Brock Lesnar?
Lesnar was in there. Minsoo Kim is a very good judoka. Okay?
Yeah.
He's not very good in MMA. He hasn't taken to it well. So it was an easy fight for Lesnar due to the fact that Minsoo Kim isn't very good and that he had very little time to train for the fight.
Yeah.
So it was a very safe first match for him, and he looked impressive. The thing I was most impressed with was I knew Lesnar had good takedowns from watching him wrestle in the NCAA. So
sure.
I didn't think that was going to be a problem for him. Okay, the way he passed from half guard in the mount was very impressive, and a lot of fighters, especially wrestlers, will try to strike from guard, strike from half guard instead of improving position before going on the attack. But he did a very good job minimizing risk and getting himself into a great position to finish.
That's what I've heard of the fight. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it just yet. But one thing I would like to see is, as Wayne Keller mentioned, I'd like to see him get in there and take a punch. You know, I imagine he's able to take a punch, but it's always good to see how how a guy reacts in a fight, for the first time he's getting hit.
Yeah, we won't know until we see that the first time.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about his chances of going into the UFC?
I think at this point they're very good.
Yeah, I agree.
He had a very impressive performance. He's a name that is, I would say, decently well known.
Yeah.
And both among pro wrestling fans and amateur wrestling fans.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I think the UFC is the next logical step for him. I don't see any promoter coming up and offering more money than Dana White can, and obviously more notoriety than Dana White can, especially in the States anyway.
Yeah, definitely for notoriety, UFC would be his best bet. I could see Bodog throwing a lot of money his way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. The Galvanair does have some pockets, that's for sure.
Yeah, and going to Bodog, there would be the opportunity for a fight against Fedor.
That's very true. Very true. It should be intriguing to see what happens with him. I think one thing to note is that he said before, you know, he doesn't need the money. He's doing it because he wants to do it, which is, you know, hey, great, because there's nothing like a fighter that's doing it because he loves to do it. So it'll be interesting to see how that influences his decision on where to go, because, you know, to me, it's inevitable that he's going to get offers from both those organizations at least. You know, he's going to hear from Bulldog, he's going to hear from UFC. So it makes me wonder, you know, where he's going to go. I mean, honestly, I don't see how Fedor even stays out of the UFC for all that much longer. You know, at least if he wants to continue to prove that he's the best fighter in the world, I don't know if that's a big item on his agenda right now. But if it is, you know, I can't see him staying out of the UFC.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that the UFC isn't going after Fedor pretty hard right now.
Yeah.
It's basically the one guy that they don't have.
Yeah. And Dana White has made no bones about it that he's in, he's trying to get Fedor right now. You know, they're in talks with him. So it's been interesting. I mean, the rest of this year, as far as free agency, is going to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, especially if the IFL has, they're having some financial difficulties right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. They basically have enough cash reserves to get through this season. And
yep.
It'll be interesting to see where those fighters end up.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, as far as the IFL goes, I mean, they've got a unique concept. I don't know that they've made some strides in getting on TV, but they've just, I mean, they could have done it so much more effectively in their favor, and I just haven't seen, you know, I haven't seen them maximize their potential as far as a fight organization. So it'll be interesting to see where they end up. I don't know that they'll be back next year.
Yeah, it'll be something to watch out for. And the weird thing about the IFL right now is it sort of seems to me like everything there occurs in a vacuum. Okay.
Yeah.
They really don't have any ranked fighters.
Yeah.
They possibly could soon with Chris Hordecki. But
yeah.
It just seems like none of these guys ever move out of the IFL, compete on smaller shows.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they can't really. I mean, with the schedule the IFL puts together, these guys are fighting so often, you know, there's nothing else for them to do. And as far as Hordecki, you know, he's looked real impressive in the IFL, but at the same time, who's he fought? You know, there's other IFL guys,
yeah.
Which, you know, and not to downplay the amount of competition in the IFL, but a lot of times you're ending up with guys that couldn't make it in the UFC. You know, Sam Hoger is one. What's the other? Alex Schoenauer is another. You know, these guys that have a few fights in the UFC and end up not getting their contract renewed, and then they end up in the IFL.
Yeah, you also have Alon Goez and Vladimir Matyushenko in there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's not a great situation for them, but at the same time, you know, they could really do a lot more than they have, I think, to make themselves more legitimate. But okay, moving on. Talk about other organizations. Let's look at the WEC. They made their cable debut this weekend. How much did you get to see of that?
I got to see all of it. I got off work today, and I caught up on the two Wreckage shows that I missed.
Great. What'd you think?
I really like the promotion.
Yeah.
There's a lot to learn from watching them. Okay. It's been very interesting so far. And,
yeah.
I mean, these guys are obviously inexperienced, and you get to see a lot of mistakes that are made, but you also get to see a lot of potential, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I thought the way they presented themselves was as close to perfect as you're going to get for a brand new promotion. I mean, they're not a new promotion, but they're a relaunched promotion, you know. I mean, they have 2-3 shows before their live debut. They get these highlights that they can put together before their live show, and you know, on their highlight show, they can showcase whoever they want because you know they already know the results, and they know who's fighting on the live show. They got Uriah Faber on there. They got Brian Stann on there. You know, guys that are exciting fighters that they can hype up before they show them live. And I think they just really did a really good job of doing that.
Yeah, one of the things I've noticed, too, that even though some of these guys are inexperienced, they got the basics down real well. I watched the John Alesio, Carlos Condit fight. And
yeah.
Condit is very impressive.
Yeah, Condit. Those knees that he was throwing, standing straight up and catching Alesio in the head, that was just amazing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, what I was more impressed with, though, was just the little things that he did.
Yeah.
And one of the examples was Alesio would get the takedown, and Condit would immediately go for an elbow escape to replace his closed guard. And it was great stuff. It's very basic jiu-jitsu, but it's something that you don't see a lot of the more experienced fighters doing.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch Condit because at first he seems like an undersized welterweight. But he goes in there and he makes up for it with things like that.
Yeah, and he works really well from the taekwondo. His knees look great.
Yeah.
And, double ankle grab sweep, he caught that twice. He wasn't able to get mount with it, but it's kind of hard to do when you're not wearing the gi.
Yeah, yeah. So we got Carlos Condit, the welterweight champ. The big guy that they're building up, obviously, is Faber, featherweight champ at 145. What's your impressions of Faber?
Faber has looked really good every time I've seen him.
Yeah.
And he has the three fights I've seen so far, Dominic Cruz, Joe Pearson, and Chance Ferrar, he's looked unstoppable against each of them.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the Ferrar fight. I mean, he was really outsized by Ferrar, but went in there and just out grappled him.
Yeah, it was a very technical grappling match.
Yeah, really entertaining too, fast paced, and they just put on a great show.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that fight a lot. I just don't see I really don't see anyone in the WEC right now that can possibly challenge him.
Yeah, yeah, I think that was that's probably what they're. What the WEC is thinking as well, you know, the way they've been showcasing Faber as a world beater, you know, which is the smart thing to do because really in 145 right now, it's Faber and everybody else, and he's just looked fantastic. I mean, even in his fights before, I've seen a couple of his fights before this in King of the Cage and such, and even in his one loss against Tyson Griffin, I mean, he puts on a pace and he's just so strong and so fast. That, you know, he just out-hustles guys and out-powers them. You know, that you just can't – it's hard to find an answer for that kind of fighter.
Yeah, I believe the fight against Griffin was contested at 145, and I really don't see Tyson Griffin getting down to that weight again.
No. Griffin's a beast. I'm surprised that he got down there in the first place.
Yeah, he's a very big 155, and I think at 145 he would just be enormous.
Yeah, which kind of helps explain how he took out Faber, because man, Griffin at 145 is just ridiculous. So what else did you see at the WEC? I liked another guy that stood out to me who was kind of an also-ran in the UFC was Brock Larson.
Yeah, Brock Larson is a very good wrestler. He does a lot of stuff really well. Okay.
Yeah.
One of the problems that Brock Larson has, though, and you saw this in the fight with Eric Apple on Breckage, is he seems to leave himself susceptible to some submissions at times.
Yeah.
And he was able to work his way out of them. He's a decent submission guy himself. His Kimura was textbook.
Yeah, boy, he just wrenched that thing. I mean, he was getting defended pretty well. Apple was defending pretty well the whole time, but he just took that Kimura and just, you know, yanked it away from his body, and that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I liked, what he did there was he basically sat on the guy's head, pulled the arm in front of him, and then wrenched it back. It was a very good technique.
Yeah, so Larson, I mean, I think Larson is one of the good examples of why the WEC is going to be helpful to the UFC in the long run. You know, Larson's a guy who fought in the UFC a couple of times, never really had a showcase bout, you know, lost to John Fitch in his debut, which is nothing to be ashamed of, obviously. But, you know, how long does it take to make a name for yourself in the welterweight division of the UFC? It takes a long time with the talent depth they have in there right now. But, you know, throw him in the WEC, he's a bigger fish in a smaller pond. He's getting an automatic title shot against Condit. I mean, he was supposed to have a title shot against Condit on Sunday night, but Condit had a separated shoulder. You know, all of a sudden, Brock Larson in the WEC is, you know, can make a name for himself a lot quicker. And then when he finally, I think, you know, regardless of what Dana White says, the WEC is going to be a feeder league for the UFC. You know, when Larson makes that jump, then he's already got a name.
Yeah, I could also see it as being something that they use to bring in the pride fighters.
Yeah. And, which they're actually, they're bringing in Paulo Filho to kick off the middleweight division in the WEC, which is, I think, a division that they haven't really showcased very much yet.
No, they haven't.
Yeah.
But he's a good one to use to showcase the division because I don't see very many people being able to handle Filho, especially with his ground game, which is tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, even in the UFC, Filho would be, you know, a top five guy for sure.
Yeah, the only thing disappointing on the WEC that I saw was the fact that they got Olaf Alfonso.
Although I was disappointed that Alfonso didn't sport the big beard like he usually does.
Yeah, the beard was the best thing about Alfonso because he shits horrible once the fight goes to the ground.
Yeah.
I mean,
As Karolexis showed, you know, he takes him down and just pounds him. You need to kill him, a guy, and he has no defense. I mean, obviously, the guy can take a punch, but he was just getting destroyed on the ground by Karolexis.
Yeah, I mean, he's passing his guard at will, and he's just doing very bad stuff on the ground. Olaf Alfonso has to go. Can't stand seeing guys fight like that.
Yeah. I think, you know, mostly I think they put him in there to showcase Karolexis. I mean, I can't imagine they put him in there to actually be a contender. I don't know that Alfonso has done anything in any of the fights that I've seen him in. I know I saw him in a fight in Pride where he got knocked out rather quickly. I think it might have been against Charles Bennett, but I'm not sure. I can't remember who it was.
It was Mahe Sakurai.
It was Sakurai, okay. Yeah. But, yeah, he, you know, he's a guy that is good for highlight reels, but, you know, you don't really see him in there making his own highlight reel.
Did you happen to catch the Kit Coke fight?
I did.
What did you think about his ground game?
I thought it was a lot better than I expected it to be. I mean, Cope is a world-class Muay Thai kind of guy. And he was going for a go-go plata at one point, which was really surprising to me.
Yeah, it impressed me that he was trying that stuff. But, it sort of got to the point of this guy's playing leg games, this guy is trying rubber guard and going for go-go platas, when he should just be focusing on the basics.
Yeah. Yeah, it was odd.
Maybe pulling the head from guard and forcing a stand-up.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, that's where he would have the advantage, even against Rob McCullough. You know, McCullough, obviously, coming from the punishment, or from Team Punishment, is going to go for ground and pound. So, you know, why try and work the ground game against him rather than just stand up?
Yeah. I saw Kit Cope fight live before in Rostraver, Pennsylvania. He fought a local guy, and he's a tremendous kickboxer. He's just got great technique on his feet.
Yeah, so this was a Muay Thai fight you saw?
It was, I believe, a kickboxing match. It was a few years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, Kickboxing's an interesting case, you know, because he's got such credentials as a kickboxer, but really hasn't done much in MMA. You know, we saw him get submitted by Kenny Florian a while back as well.
Yeah, the Kenny Florian fight was probably his best fight, though. He did a commendable job against Florian.
Yeah. Yeah, and Florian still was able to, I mean, he almost submitted him in the first round, and I think he had an arm bar on him, or I can't remember exactly what it was that happened, but looked like he injured him in the first round and then came out in the second and finished him rather quickly.
Yeah. It was a pretty close first round. Florian did win it, though, but second round was it was over in a heartbeat.
Yeah. And then it looked like he was injured again in the McCullough fight, maybe with a broken rib.
Yeah, that didn't look very good.
No, it looked pretty bad.
He was in a lot of pain.
Yeah, you never want things protruding from your skin.
Yeah.
It's not ever a good sign. So WEC, I think the WEC has a lot of potential if they can get a base, get a fan base, you know, of building up guys and getting them ready for the big show. Especially, like you said, these Pride guys who come over with not much of a name over here. Guys like Phil, guys like Dennis Kang, my gosh. I mean, can you imagine if they set up a Kang and Filio fight in the WEC? I mean, that's one that we were waiting for in that middleweight Grand Prix.
What's that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah. So I mean, that's the kind of potential they have. I mean, they could put on some really good fights, and just showcasing the lighter weights, I think, is a huge plus for them as well, because it's something you're not going to see on free TV anywhere else.
Yeah, it's definitely not. I mean, you can pick up some King of the Cage DVDs and check
those
out. But other than that, there really aren't many promotions out there that that you can see the lighter weight guys.
Yeah, so it'll definitely be interesting. There's another live event coming up in August, which I think, you know, it's a pretty good pace for them. They've got their record show that's going to be on every week, their highlight show, and gotta, you know, if they keep putting on the pace of a live event every couple of months until they get kind of some momentum, I think they've got a chance to really make some noise.
Do you know if the record show is only going to show fights since the Zuffa buyout?
I believe so. As far as I'm aware, I think it might be in their best interest to show a couple of older fights anyway, of guys that are still around. But I think time will tell. They've only got two events to pull from, I believe, from before WC 28. I think they only had two events since Zuffa bought them out. So I'm not sure exactly what their plan is. I don't know how many new episodes they've ordered or how many new episodes Versus has ordered, whether it's a bunch or whether they're just going to kind of have a set amount and then replay them a few times.
Yeah, I think it's only been two shows because I believe there was one in March, one in January.
Yeah, yeah. So that's they don't have a whole lot of material to pull from. My instinct tells me that they would probably just pull from those two shows. You know, the way Zuffa operates, they kind of not are big. They're not big fans of history, as we say.
Yeah, they're not.
speaking of which, I don't know if you've heard this quote. I'm going to read you a quote here. From Dana White. If you've heard it, you might have, but I want to get your reaction to this. Dana White was doing an interview with the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and they were talking to him about the Liddell Rampage fight. And Dana White says, "You never know who's going to win. Chuck getting knocked out was the equivalent of Buster Douglas knocking out Mike Tyson."
Wow. That's funny.
Yeah, that was my first reaction.
Yeah, I don't remember a time before the Tokyo Dome match that Buster Douglas had dominated Mike Tyson for about 6 minutes.
it kills me sometimes, some of the things that they say, you know, Are they completely discounting anything that happened before they bought Pride? So now we're saying that the loss was a fluke? Is that what we're saying here? I mean, you know, Jackson is your champion now, and you could ride him to millions of dollars, and he's equating it to Buster Douglas beating Tyson. I don't understand it. To me, it's more like Lennox Lewis beating Tyson.
Maybe that, or it's hard to think of it's comparable to the third Manny Pacquiao against Eric Morales match.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just crazy to me that he would undercut that win like that. I don't understand it.
Yeah, Jackson's a champion now. He should be getting behind him.
Yeah, and it's not even as if Liddell's getting an immediate rematch. You know, if Jackson goes on a tear now and beats Henderson, beats the winner of Liddell Silva, goes and takes on Shogun again, then what's that going to make this look like, you know, if Dana White's calling it a fluke? So you've got a fluke champion that goes on a tear and wins four or five, you know, gets four or five title defenses. I mean, it's just silly. I don't understand the logic behind making a comment like that.
Yeah, it's obvious that Dana White has always been a big Chuck Liddell fan, and I think that's where the reaction comes from.
Yeah, yeah, you got to think. Yeah, you would have to think it's personal because, you know, they're buddies, and you know, obviously the UFC has kind of ridden Liddell to a lot of their success. He's been kind of their poster boy, so I don't know. Maybe he takes it personally that the bell got knocked down. I don't know. But it's just strange.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, moving on, let's look at the Ultimate Fighter episode, the most recent. What are your thoughts coming out of that one? We had Nate Diaz and Corey Hill. Then we had Matt Wyman taking on Manny Gamburian. What did you think of that show?
I enjoyed the show tonight a lot.
I did too.
It was two fights I was interested in. It was basically we got to see Corey Hill again, which interests me since he's such an odd lightweight.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Hill, he looked a lot stronger coming out in this fight than he did in the first one against Emerson, I thought.
Yeah, he looked a lot stronger. He pounded on Diaz for a bit, but, in watching the fight, it was obvious that if he stayed on the ground, he was going to make a mistake, and
yeah,
that's what happened.
Yeah.
He got caught in a triangle choke.
Yeah, it was pretty much an eventuality once he got to the ground that Diaz was going to submit him. But I was surprised, I mean, even with Corey Hill's height, that he was able to kind of neutralize Diaz on the feet like he did.
Yeah, it didn't seem like Diaz was really trying to throw strikes.
Yeah, I think he was more surprised that he just wanted to get it to the ground than anything else.
Yeah, he went in there with a game plan, and he didn't deviate from it at all.
Yeah, yeah, which obviously, obviously it's the way to go. He got the triangle in the first round and won pretty handily. But, yeah, Corey Hill, I'll tell you what, I think it's like Pulver said, if he's in a camp where he can get coached up, he's got quite a bit of potential.
Yeah, he could be a good one someday.
Yeah. Now, he's still green, but, I mean, if they take some time to build him up, kind of like Matt Hamill, it's definitely interesting to see where he could go.
Yeah, the guy's got a great personality, too.
Yeah, for sure.
A little scary.
Yeah.
I know when I was cutting weight a few weeks ago, I wasn't talking to an imaginary friend, or at least I can remember it.
Yeah. What'd you think of Wyman and Gamburian?
Well, Manny just overpowered him the whole time. And that's what I expected going into the fight. Manny and Nate Diaz have been my picks to win, to make it to the finals on the show since the beginning, and they're both still involved in it.
Yeah.
Previews, it looks like they're fighting next week, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, I would think that they would match up, guys on opposite teams since they've got 2-2, but we'll have to kind of see where that goes. Boy, that Gamburian, boy, he was just a ball of fire coming out of there. I think he was kind of a sleeper going into it, a guy that not a lot of people saw coming, but, man, he's relentless.
Yeah, he's a good fighter. He does make some mistakes, though. He went for a Kimura without controlling Wyman with his legs. And got himself in a bad position at near the end of the second round. And Wyman ended up getting his back, and he could have been in some trouble there.
Yeah. Yeah, but he put on a pace, though, that it looked like he wore Wyman out. I mean, Wyman said after the fight that he wasn't really into it, and it kind of showed. I mean, it looked like he was just finished about halfway through the second round.
Yeah, it... It actually seemed like Wyman was one of those guys that, really didn't dig the fact that he was being hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was like BJ Penn said after the fight that he was worried about how his face was going to look after the fight, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah. Some of the punches that he threw, okay, they were from so far out, it was like he was shadow boxing for his fight.
Yeah. Yeah, he was really telegraphing a lot of his stuff. But, Wyman's a guy, I had him as one of the favorites, at least to make it to the semis. So I was kind of surprised. I expected him to go in and win this fight. Not handily, but I thought he would take a decision. But he just got dominated pretty much, I mean, essentially, for both rounds.
Yeah, Wyman... In the one fight he has had in the UFC against Spencer Fisher, he looked very good the first round. And
yep.
he sort of died after that.
Yeah.
And I just don't know what it is with him, but it seemed like once it started to become a tough fight, he started to give up a little.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good observation. Now that I'm looking back at that at Spencer Fisher fight, which was an entertaining fight, by the way. It was fun to watch. But, yeah, you're right. In that second round, it was pretty much a matter of time before Fisher caught him with that with the punch and then with the flying knee.
Yeah, and I've always wondered about that fight. I don't watch very much UFC Unleashed since I've already seen most of that stuff. But every time I'm looking for the channels, it just seems like that fight's on.
Yeah.
It seems like every episode of Unleashed has to include that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't watch a lot of Unleashed either since, like you said, I've seen all those fights before. But, I've had the same experience flipping through and seeing that a couple of times. Two or three times when Unleashed was on, it was on. That one, and there's an Arlovsky fight that was on there. Maybe Matyushenko, I can't remember. But anyway, moving on. Let's see, also concerning Ultimate Fighter, we've got Dana White now coming out and saying that Marlon Sims and Noah Thomas will never fight in the UFC after, this of course coming after the announcement that they'd be fighting at the Ultimate Fighter finale on the 23rd. What's your take on this?
It's rather strange because he basically had Dana trying to pass off that he did not know that Spike had signed this fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's that Dana was basically hearing the backlash that, hey, this isn't good for the sport, and, sort of reacted to that.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty hilarious the way he tried to say he didn't know about the fight until yesterday, the day before, something like that. Now, I don't know, did you hear anything about the Josh Koscheck MySpace blog thing?
Yeah, I heard that someone hacked his MySpace page.
Yeah,
posted an article on unionization of fighters. And
yeah.
I've yet to read it.
Yeah, I read a little bit of it. Basically, you know, it's trashing the structure, the pay structure of the UFC, saying they need to pay the fighters more. All that kind of thing. But the point I want to make with that is that Koscheck, obviously didn't know about it at first. But I guess it was the first guy to call him to let him know. Dana White. So you're telling me that Dana White knows about Josh Koscheck's MySpace blog before Koscheck does, but doesn't know about the about this fight that's been signed for the Ultimate Fighter finale on the 23rd. I find that a little bit hard to swallow myself.
Well, you have to look at it this way. If Dana White and Josh Koscheck are MySpace friends, he might have been sent an email whenever that was posted.
True enough. I'm not too familiar with the MySpace. I don't have one myself because I can't stand to look at the website for more than 5 minutes. It makes my head hurt.
Yeah, it does.
Not to say that you shouldn't visit the MMA Torch page on MySpace, because we do have one. I've seen it once or twice myself, but anyway, I prefer to stick with regular websites that don't make my brain leak out of my ears.
Or crash your browser.
Yeah, exactly. But moving on, also in the tough finale, which is going to be interesting, Roger Huerta has been signed to fight on there. Doesn't have an opponent yet, but Huerta is, I think that's a great move to get him on free TV, because Huerta is a great entertaining fighter.
Yeah, he's very entertaining, and he's very popular among the Mexican crowd. And it's a good break through for them, especially in, say, the San Diego areas and down in the Southwest.
Yeah, I think it's a real good move to get him on free TV. So now you've got Jens Pulver, BJ Penn as the main event, and you've got Huerta on the undercard. I'm sure that's going to be a televised fight. I can't imagine that it wouldn't be. And that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. And one final thought on the Marlon Sims, Noah Thomas thing.
Yeah.
And the backlash from that, it's backlash against Marlon Sims and Noah Thomas. No one's going to remember this come 5 weeks from now.
Nope.
It's two fighters that, you know, really would never make a mark in the UFC.
No, I think that's why I think that's why Dana White could safely say that neither of them would ever fight in the UFC.
Yeah,
these aren't guys that are going to go to the smaller shows and make a big noise and kind of force the issue. You know, maybe Marlon Sims is going to win a bunch of street fights and become the next Kimbo Slice. I don't know, but he's certainly not going to force his way back onto a UFC card.
Yeah. I was not impressed with really either of them and their fights on the Ultimate Fighter, and I think they each had a better performance in the street fight.
Yeah. Yeah, two guys that weren't real impressive. Let's look ahead to Tuesday night. We've got UFC Fight Night, the 10th installment of that. A few intriguing fights on here. They've only got three fights advertised for the televised card, which is ironic because if you look at the WEC card last week, I can't remember how many they had actually advertised for the main card. I think it was four. But they ended up showing six fights in 2 hours, which is insane. I mean, obviously they had some good picks with the first round endings, but I mean, six fights in 2 hours with commercials—that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Well, you have a lot of inexperienced fighters in WEC that are more likely to get caught in a bad position. So the fights are going to be shorter.
Yeah. Oh, one thing I almost forgot. Put a pause on the Fight Night preview for a second. Mark Hominick fight.
Yeah, that surprised me. He went up against Ronnie Yahya. And,
yeah.
Yahya had had about the worst takedown attempt by a bottle.
Yeah, I'm watching first couple seconds of this fight, and I'm thinking, what is this guy doing? He's never going to take Hominick down.
Well, one of the things I've learned through Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu doesn't teach takedowns very well, and there's not really too many guys in Jiu-Jitsu that have great takedowns. What you're seeing more are guys shooting in for a leg and quickly pulling guard.
Yeah, it makes sense because, you know, I mean, the way jiu-jitsu is, there's not a lot of stand-up game, obviously. So, you know, why bother teaching a takedown? I mean, that's more of a wrestling, mixed martial arts thing than obviously jiu-jitsu. But, yeah, I was shocked when he pulled that off. I mean, obviously he was relentless in going for the takedown and finally ended up getting Hominick's back. But I thought Hominick for sure was just going to pick this guy apart for a couple of minutes at the most to knock him out.
Yeah, it should have happened. Hominick's very good on his feet.
Yeah.
And he was he has defeated George Gurgel in the UFC. And he looked impressive in that match. And,
yeah, and Gurgel is no slouch either in jiu-jitsu, black belt.
No, he's not.
Yeah. And even, I mean, he beat Eve Edwards, too, you know. So, I mean, we know he's got a ground game. I mean, he submitted Edwards with a triangle, and we know he's good on the feet as he, you know, obviously outstruck Gurgel and even outstruck Edwards for a little while, getting that liver kick so he could take him down. But I was just, you know, I was surprised that he gave up his back that easily.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to the Fight Night card, we've got the aforementioned Spencer Fisher taking on Sam Stout. What do you think of that fight? Now, this is a rematch, obviously, from earlier on. They fought this fight at 155 before. Fisher, coming into their first fight, had just fought a fight at 170 a few, I want to say a few days before, maybe up to a week before, cut about 10 pounds in a couple of days and took the fight to a decision, which he lost. What's your take on this one?
I have a feeling that it's going to be a close fight like the last time. I don't think the weight cutting really hurts Spencer Fisher that much. When it comes down to it, even for a 155-pounder, 10 pounds really isn't a lot.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. If you're cutting weight to make 155, you're going to be doing 10 pounds in one day anyway.
Right.
Okay. What it may have been, it may have been that he had just come off a fight and was coming down off of that. And possibly hadn't been training, took a week or two off, and, you know, was a little rusty going into this one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's possible. I see it like you do as far as it being a close fight. I think Fisher takes it this time, but I do think it'll be it should be an entertaining fight. I mean, Stout's a good good fighter, so is Fisher. Fisher's always entertaining, so it should be a decent fight.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's a good main event. It's not a high-profile one, but
yeah.
It should provide an exciting fight.
Yeah. Who do you have winning it?
Spencer Fisher, and I'm thinking a unanimous decision.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. I think either a late submission or a decision for Fisher. Next on the list, we've got John Fitch breaking into the main card. Taking on Juan Carnero, I'm butchering his name, I know I am, but this is the guy that beat Rich Clemente at the last fight night. What do you have for this fight?
I have John Fitch winning it, and
yeah.
I think Fitch is a real deal.
I do too.
He's a very good wrestler, can get guys to the ground, he can pound them out, and is very aggressive. He puts on some exciting fights.
Yep.
UFC hasn't put him on TV that often, so I don't think many of the fans that are just casual fans are very familiar with John Fitch. I know when I went to UFC 68 back in March, he was one of the prelim fights, and to tell you the truth, I'm not sure if they ever showed it on the pay-per-view.
No, they didn't.
But Canero, he's a decent fighter. He's beat some names before. He has a split decision win over Matt Horwich, who fought for the IFL this past weekend, and he has also defeated Rodrigo Ruas in Brazil. So,
yep.
He's going to be Fitch's toughest test in the UFC so far.
Okay. Yeah, really? So it's good. You think it's going to be his toughest guy?
Yeah, it's a different fight than Larson because Canero's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter. And,
sure.
It's going to be different than going up against another wrestler.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be an interesting fight. I hope that if Fitch could get this win, which I think he will, I hope he can get some higher profile names to take him on in the next few bouts. You know, we're going to have a welterweight title drought for a little while, so you know, hopefully Fitch can start moving up the ranks a little bit, or at least you know, be given the opportunity to move up the ranks.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy that deserves a shot, and I could. By the end of the year, I could see him being a ranked fighter and someone that's talked about as being a possible title contender.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to see him take on maybe the loser of Koscheck St. Pierre. I mean, I know Koscheck and he fight in the same camp, and I have St. Pierre winning that fight, so it probably won't happen, but still, I'd like to see it.
Yeah, it would definitely be an interesting match.
Yeah.
Koscheck is, of course, the better wrestler between the two, but, you know, it's one of those things that the chance of it happening is slim and none.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. if we're looking at the third fight on the televised card, we've got Drew McFedries, the always entertaining Drew McFedries, taking on Jordan Radev, his UFC debut. What do you have in this fight? You know, what do you know about Jordan Radev? Anything?
Jordan Radev is a wrestler from Bulgaria.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, back in the 60s, there was a Byron Radev that was an Olympic gold medalist from around the same area. So I don't know if there's any relation, but I'm expecting a real strong upper body wrestler.
Yeah.
He doesn't have, wins over, very many contenders throughout his career. He does hold a decision over Jorge Santiago,
mm-hmm.
which was probably his biggest match.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen much of Radev. What I have seen of him has just been his striking, and he does seem to have some pretty good striking. Obviously not against big names or anything, but he has a couple of knockouts. I'm thinking we'll probably get some slugging to start out before they get into the wrestling match. McFedries, I think, though, is not to be taken lightly as a wrestler. He's not not the best wrestler, but he trains with Miletic, so that speaks for itself, really.
Yes, it does. McFedries is he's just a very strong guy, and
yeah.
He last fought at UFC 68 against Martin Kampmann, and that fight
yeah.
Did not go as I expected. I expected Kampmann to dominate the stand-up and McFedries to dominate on the ground, but it was the exact opposite.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that Kampmann, being the more – I was with you – being the more diverse striker would let McFedries have it, but McFedries, boy, he just – with his fists, let Kampmann have it. And I did think Kampmann had the better ground game, which he ended up winning with that side choke, which was, that was an impressive transition into the choke, too, the way he did that. But, I think this should be a kind of a sleeper fight, I think, this McFedries and Radev fight. Should be a pretty entertaining fight. I think it's probably going to end in a knockout, maybe a second round or so. It's a tough one to call, though, not knowing Radev very well, not knowing what his chin is. But I tell you what, if he goes in there and slugs with McFedries, I mean, this is a guy that that TKO'd Alessio Sakara at 205, so he's a tough guy to knock out.
Yeah. The one thing about McFedries, though, is I've noticed that weigh-ins, he comes out looking rather drawn. So if a fight goes into the second, third round, there may be some cardio issues there.
Yeah, that'll be interesting because he hasn't gotten out of the first round yet.
Yeah, he hasn't. But my prediction on this one is Jordan Radev, I'm seeing it going to a decision.
Interesting. Yeah, it's a tough one to call, like I said, I'm looking forward to that one. If we're moving down, we've got Jason Black, who's got some credentials, going up against Thiago Tavares, making his second appearance in the UFC. What do you have for this one?
I have Thiago Tavares taking this one, and he's had a pretty impressive career so far. He's undefeated at 12-0. He really hasn't been tested too much yet.
Yeah.
And but I've been pretty impressed with what I've seen, and which hasn't been much. And I think he should be able to take this one over Black.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. I think Black. Black's a guy. He's got 21 wins. Only two losses, but hasn't really fought a lot of top competition, other than the guys that have beaten him. He was beaten by Shoni Carter, which was kind of, it was an injury. He dislocated his elbow in that fight, which was a shame, but he also lost to Shinya Aoki. Obviously, Aoki being a superior submission fighter, And Black actually excels at submissions as well as Tavares. So it's kind of, I'm seeing this one going, I think, late submission or decision, really, for Tavares.
Yeah, I definitely think it's going to be a decision. It's, I can see it being a fight that Tavares wants to, that he'll want to keep on his feet. On his feet.
Yeah.
He should have the advantage here.
Yeah. That's definitely an intriguing fight. I don't know if it'll be a crowd pleaser, but it's one that I'm looking forward to anyway. The next one, though, I think can't help but be a crowd pleaser. Luigi Fioravanti versus Forrest Pettis.
Yeah, I'm hoping this one gets on the main show because, I've enjoyed watching both guys in the past. Forrest Pettis in the UFC, he hasn't had much success. He got submitted by Marcus Davis.
Yep.
And lost a decision to Kuniyoshi Hironaka. He does hold a win over Sam Morgan, who I believe was in the second Ultimate Fighter show.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But outside the UFC, he has a win over Charles Crazy Horse Bennett, and he's also lost to Josh Neer.
Yeah, yeah. Who do you have? Who do you have taking this one?
I see Luigi Fioravanti taking the fight. He's a fighter that's very hard to look impressive against.
Yes.
Okay. John Fitch was able to submit him at UFC 68 with a rear naked choke and pretty much dominated him. And Chris Lieben defeated him by decision, but he's just one of those guys that gets in there and scraps. He comes from a good gym with the American Top Team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he'll be able to ride out the decision.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. I think Fiore might be able to stop him with strikes maybe in the second round or so. And I should mention, I'm going to post my picks later, and I'm not writing any of these down. I'll be picking the same guy, but sometimes my endings are kind of a toss-up. So if it's any different than what I'm saying now, that's probably one. But I do have Fioravanti winning this one by TKO, possibly in the second round. I think he's just got the better hands here. But if we're moving down again, we've got a lightweight fight next. Tamdan McCrory versus Pete Spratt.
Oh, this one's an easy one for me to call, and I'm going basically off of experience here. McCrory is making his mixed martial arts debut, and Pete Spratt's an experienced fighter. Pete Spratt should win this.
Yep. Yeah, McCrory's a guy with good hands. Fights in the NABC, which is a sanctioning body for boxing. He has fought a couple of times in MMA for the NABC, but I believe he's their their lightweight champion. But I'm with you. I think Spratt takes this one. Spratt's not a real accomplished guy on the ground, but I don't think he'll need to be here, and he'll win this one by knockout. We're moving down. We got Jeff Cox versus Gleison Thibeau.
Gleison Thibeau, he last fought for the UFC at, I believe, UFC 68 against Jason Dent.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to pull off a win. Crowd didn't like it very much, but he was able to pretty much control the fight on the ground. And he's a good jiu-jitsu guy.
Yeah, and you got to keep in mind as well that Jason Dent is a guy that can't be finished.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I just remember from that fight that the crowd was annoying because there was some decent groundwork in it, but they just weren't buying it.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's see what we got here. I who do you have winning this one?
I have Thibeau winning, and I'm going with another decision. I think that this is going to be a night full of them.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about Cox, so I'm going to go with Thibeau as well. The finish, you know, I'm just going to throw one out there, probably also by decision, because that's, I mean, you know, Thibeau in the fights that I've seen him in against Nick Diaz and Jason Benn, you know, seems to be his kind of game is control the fight and, you know, he'll probably just be able to ride out that decision.
Yeah, Jeff Cox is he's a fighter out of Cleveland, Ohio, and he actually fights out of the same gym as Forrest Pettis.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
So he's got where's his strength? Is it on the ground, on the feet?
He's mostly he's pretty much a submission guy. Okay, he doesn't have real flashy submissions. Okay, pretty much a take a guy down and you know, work for his back, get a rear naked choke.
Sure.
So he is he fought on some King of the Cage shows. I've seen him on DVD a few times. The one named fighter that he took on was Thiago Alves, who has fought in the UFC, and Alves
yep.
won by knockout, and that was about 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I should say his nickname is the Grinder, so that should probably tell you a little bit about his style, if that's applicable there. Next fight, we've got Luke Caudillo versus Nate Moore.
Yeah, this when you get to the bottom of this card, this one's tough to call because a lot of the previous fights that these guys have had are very hard to track down.
Yeah, yeah.
Caudillo is he's from Nebraska. I haven't seen him fight yet, and I've been able to find very little information. Just from where he's from, it seems like he would be a wrestler, and his record's 12-6. He has 8 of his wins by TKO, and doesn't seem to have very many submissions. And
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how some of these younger guys do in the UFC.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they're bringing up a lot of guys right now, and Reiner's. Another guy from Nebraska.
Yeah.
And he is he's more of a submission guy. He's 13-2 right now. He's won 6 of his fights by submission. Neither of them have fought very many big names. Reiner has lost to Josh Berkman on a UFC Fight Night show that I believe was earlier this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, he also has a loss to Dustin Haslett, so he's beating the guys that he should beat and losing to some of the ones that have had success in the past. So
mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to go with Reiner in this one and win by submission.
Yeah. It's like you say, it's tough to pick them at the bottom of these cards. I think I think the UFC does a good job of putting these fight night cards together, you know, as far as putting the lesser known fighters at the bottom of the card, you know, getting a look at them, and then kind of making it a little bit top heavy, which is pretty much in their best interest to do at this point. You know, they want to get some good fights on free TV to get people to buy the pay per views, and. I think this, like we were saying, this main event here, I think is kind of a sleeper. It doesn't look great on paper as far as star power, but Fisher and Stout should be able to put on a good fight. And, you know, McFedry's Radev, I think, is going to be pretty entertaining. If Fioravanti and Pettis get on TV, that's going to be a good one. And even potentially, I think Black and Tavares could be an entertaining fight, potentially, depending on how that turns out, if they put on the kind of pace that they're capable of doing. But I think altogether, this looks like a pretty solid card. You know, you never know what's going to happen on these undercard fights. You may get a quick knockout or a first round finish that's exciting. So they've got potentially a pretty solid card.
Yeah, I'd like to change my pick on that one too. sort of the problem of trying to stick all your notes for one show on one sheet of paper.
Right.
Get mixed up, and he's actually fighting Nate Moore, not Chad Rayner.
Yeah. See, I was looking below too. I've got Khabib and Rayner above and below each other. Yeah. So, who do you have for that fight?
I definitely have to go with Nate Moore.
Yeah.
Due to the fact that he comes from Team Curran, and Jeff Curran is he trained at Pedro Sauer Jiu-Jitsu. I go to a Pedro Sauer affiliated school, so I'm going to go with him.
All right.
Understand.
All right. Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe pick. You know, Khabib being a relative unknown. Nate Moore is a guy who actually, he had a fight in the UFC earlier, I believe earlier this year, except it's escaping me who exactly he fought. But I know he was in there. He's been in there before. I believe he came up on the short end. At that point, let me look this up real quick while I'm talking.
He fought Kirk Pellegrino.
Pellegrino, yes, and Pellegrino choked him out pretty quick. Or no,
yeah.
It was an Achilles lock.
Yeah, Pellegrino is a very good submission grappler. I mean,
yeah.
He competed at the Abu Dhabi Combat Championship this past year and didn't do very well, but he's definitely someone to watch out for in the 155-pound weight class.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's a guy that can really sneak up on some people. Justin Cao is the guy I was thinking of that he choked out pretty quick. But he's got, you know, two first-round victories in the UFC. I think he's a guy that they could easily put on a televised card that could put on a pretty good show for the people. So, back to that fight. I think Moore is probably the safe pick there as well, probably submission. And then we've got Chad Rayner versus nobody right now, which means, you know, it could mean that we're going to get a really late replacement, or it could mean that fight off the card. Rayner being a welterweight, as we mentioned, who lost to Jess Berkman earlier this year. So that's about it for the UFC Fight Night card. Let's see if we've got anything else on the agenda here.
Kazushi Sakuraba.
What's that?
How about Royce Gracie against Kazushi Sakuraba?
Oh, there you go. Yeah, give me your thoughts on that one. I did want to talk to you about that because you're kind of the MMA Torch authority on the first fight. I want to see what your thoughts are on the second one.
I was disappointed in the second fight, and it wasn't with anything that either Gracie or Sakuraba did in that fight. It was with the fact that there was a time limit. And limiting it to 15 minutes is limiting it to a one-round fight for them.
Yeah.
And I thought that Gracie had won the fight. I did not think we got a conclusive finish.
Yeah.
And I think that coming out of that show, one of the things I wanted to see was a rematch between them. And it's something I think we could possibly see a K-1 show, say maybe New Year's Eve this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's almost inevitable to get that that rematch. And I was surprised when I heard that they were even going to do this fight on a card in the States. You know, like you said, because of the time limit and because of, you know, I mean, in large part, the fans over here don't know the history between these two guys. And, you know, I mean, of the 40, if you get 42,000 mixed martial arts fans together, which, you know, as I said, I think is a dubious number, you know, maybe half of them are even going to know that these guys have fought before.
Yeah, it's definitely not something for the new fans that came along during The Ultimate Fighter. It's definitely something that you really have to understand the history of.
Yeah.
And you've had to have seen Gracie dominate the UFC in the early days. You had to see the rise of Kazushi Sakuraba, first taking on Marcus Silvera, who was very impressive in the old Extreme Fighting, and submitting him with the armbar to win the first UFC Japan, and then just working his way up against various Brazilians to the point where he finally got a Gracie to fight him, and then winning four straight fights against Gracie.
Yep.
But it's, you know, something that the story going into the fight is I knew it was going to be bigger than the fight itself.
Oh, for sure.
And I don't think even with the half-hour specials on Showtime that they got that point across well.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I haven't seen the fight yet, but, you know, there was just no way it could live up to anything about the first fight. You know, the significance of the first fight, you know, the time of the first fight, the time, I mean, you know, it's to both guys that are past their prime. I mean, Sakuraba has taken so much punishment over the past few years. He's just not the same fighter that he was when he first fought Gracie. But I think it's like you said, I think our rematch is inevitable between these guys. But there's no, you know, there's no way they're doing it in the States where they're going to have a time limit.
Yeah, it's. I have a feeling if we see it one more time, it's going to be something with either an extended time limit or they may go with the unlimited time limit for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to agree with that. There was one more news item I wanted to get your take on. Jens Pulver, there's a report coming out that after the fight with BJ Penn, he'll be moving into the WEC and moving down to the featherweight division, the 145, which would kind of make that a 10 weight class, being Faber and Pulver. What's your take on that?
I've always enjoyed watching Jens Pulver as a fighter. Okay, it's one of those things that he could definitely, you know, looking at his body type, I definitely think he could make 145.
Yeah,
I don't think that would be much of an issue. Okay, I just don't know if he can compete with Uriah Faber. It's Faber has looked very impressive so far, and in his last couple fights, Jens Pulver, you know, he hasn't been the same fighter he was when he was UFC champion.
Yeah, I agree. I think the fight with Penn will be telling. I mean, and Penn hasn't fought at 155 for, I don't even know how long. I think it still will be a good litmus test for Pulver to see where he is as a fighter. I mean, maybe even if he loses this fight, you know, maybe he gets rejuvenated at 145. I mean, who knows? But it seems kind of, I don't know, it's kind of weird, you know, the way they marketed this fight as being almost a contender's fight, you know? I mean, say Pulver wins, and he's supposed to get a shot at the lightweight title. He's moving to featherweight. You know, it just seems kind of odd to me that they would announce the move this early. I mean, it almost takes something away from the Penn fight.
Yeah, it does. It really shows that they have a lack of confidence in him winning the fight. They did for the first one, too, and he was able to pull that one off. I think it's going to be a good story this time, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I guess so. So you've got Penn winning that fight, I'm guessing?
Yeah. I don't think I've – I very infrequently go against BJ Penn in the fight. The man's just so talented.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I've also got Penn in that fight. I mean, it's the kind of thing where, you know, Penn, like you said, is just so talented, and he's, you know, he's older now than he was when the first time they fought. And Pulver is just hasn't looked the same. You know, he came in and lost to Lozon, which, you know, everybody loses a fight like that every now and then. But I've got Penn winning that one. Well, I think that does it for the news items. and that's puts us a little bit over an hour. You have any parting shots going out?
Not this time. One of the things that, well, actually I do got something. One of the things I'm going to be working on is sort of a story for the Torch on amateur MMA. And what the rules are in different states, how it differs from professional mixed martial arts, and just how they, the commissions keep professional fighters from competing as amateurs to protect fighters against better fighters and promoters.
Yep.
But hopefully I can get to a few amateur shows that are run in the Ohio area and, you know, check out the scene there, see how the shows are run, how the fights play out. And the few shows I've been to, they're usually pretty exciting because you get a lot of first-round knockouts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good. That's something I'm looking forward to. I didn't get to get back to you on the forums about that, but I think it's a great idea to hear something about the amateur scene because it's not something you hear about a whole lot, and it's not something that a lot of people are exposed to. So I'll be looking forward to seeing that piece. So, Mike, thanks for joining me on the show this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, and for Mike Jarclick, this is Sean Ennis. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week.